Hi, it's Alan Carrington again, and today I'm back with Ken Sparrow online in Skype. Hi, Ken, how you doing?
I am doing well, Alan. How are you?
I'm fine. My voice is a bit croaky, but you learn to live with that. That's to do with operations and medical and stuff. But Ken, your last webinar, which is going to be on the bottom of this blog entry for this time together, was terrific, man. I really appreciated that. I'm going to leave all that thoughtfulness and thought, what's the other side of it? Thoughtfulness and thoughtlessness. I'll get it right in a minute. to let you talk about that in that webinar. I'm going to advise the listeners right now that is really meaty stuff, guys. So make sure you've got lots of coffee before you get into that presentation, because Ken doesn't waste a word. In fact, it's pretty rapid, actually. So I'm going to leave that to what it is. But Ken, that why smart people make not smart decisions, which is what they called it it was with the Immersive Learning University, right? Are you doing any more of that, by the way?
Yes, there is. They'll be announcing another webinar, I think, for the end of June that I'll be doing.
What's it going
with
to be?
Them.
Got any idea what it
and
is?
And I think the topic is going to be on scorecards. That's okay. What I'm proposing. It hasn't been solidified yet, but I'm proposing to do something on writing good scorecards.
That's a really interesting subject. And, of course, as we've already talked about offline, that I'd like to do that in another episode. That's a fascinating concept. And so we'll get there, I hope, if you don't mind. But what I wanted to talk about today was, let me just recap what we did last time for people who might not have seen it yet. You talked about, unpacked for us, 7 benefits of scenario-based learning. Now, jump in, but let's do this pretty quickly. They're a form of storytelling, right?
Correct.
They engage our emotions. Now, if you want to comment on this, well, we're welcome to. 1, they are a form of storytelling. 2, they engage our emotions. 3, they enable failing forward. And please, guys, for those listening, go and have a listen to that podcast about failing forward. They promote critical thinking. They accelerate time. They provide shared context. And then they trigger our memories. Now, that was the last episode, Ken. Today I'd like to talk to you about how do we learn and build on our experience. Now, you talk about, and by all means mention your booklet, the InfoLine one, which was linked in the last podcast as well. But in that booklet, you talk about 3 components of experience design. So what are they, and how beneficial are these to the learners?
Well, they're very beneficial. And this is all part of distinguishing, the whole point of calling it experience design is as opposed to or as a complement to, it doesn't have to be opposed to it, but instructional design, and to recognize that sometimes it's important to teach, and that's where the power of instructional design and the tools and techniques of that methodology are very powerful. But experience design relates to the issues associated with capturing an experience, which is different. And part of what we're trying to also distinguish is when learning takes place. In instruction, I'm conveying the learning, and it's going to take place as you go through the module. When it comes to experience, it's going to be different. And one of the key differences is in instruction, this is all the amount I need to teach you. With respect to experience, it's all good. So even a bad experience can often be a very powerful or very good learning opportunity. And so the question is that given that they are different, how do we go about creating them so that we're actually capturing experience in a box or an apprenticeship in a box, so to speak, but at the same time make it sticky, because it's not real life experience. It's still a simulated experience. And so some of the key design elements that we use, one is the story itself and the way and the consequences that are experienced. We talked a lot in the last podcast about the power of in this modality of emotional engagement, that emotional engagement in terms of how the brain works is a key component to what moves things from short-term to long-term memory. In other words, what makes it so that we deal with it and then we can retain it and then ultimately retrieve it when we need it, which is what our ultimate goal is. And so if we design a good story, the story in terms of its unfolding, the first way that learning takes place in experience design is through the decisions we make and the associated consequences that we experience, so that when we do something, we have to live with it. It's important we don't give a mulligan, a do-over. There's no do-overs in a simulation, because part of the issue, part of the learning opportunity is to fail forward, is to do it wrong, and then get that 2x4 between the eyes that says, oh, okay, that was not the way to do it, and that's why, because I experienced that consequence. And so thinking things through from the evolving story, that's the first way. However, given that it's not, you know, one of the challenges that we try to overcome in terms of designing experience is that we're not designing the experience, we're just designing an experience, which kind of loosens things up, or gives us more license to play, gives us more, in the writing aspect and the designing aspect, it gives us a lot more flexibility. And so when we're allowing that kind of play, we're not trying to be the be-all and end-all from an experience standpoint. There may be some other lessons that need to be learned as I make decisions and I make mistakes or realize success. And that's where this, you know, where we want to embed the stickiness, that's going to be through the feedback. And so what I can do is I can embed both narrative feedback in terms of what was going on in that scenario, what were the issues, what was the issues associated with the choice that you made, what was the to explain why the consequence happened. And then this leads into a distinction between immediate feedback or delayed feedback. So depending on your learning preference or your students' learning preferences, you can actually write for immediate feedback. I happen to be of my bias is to go for delayed feedback because I want people to live the experience for as long as they're going to go through the exercise and then subsequently give them the feedback, where it allows them to – one of the other elements in how the brain works is repetition. So it allows them to kind of relive the experience through the narrative of the feedback. So there's that opportunity.
Back to this question of feedback, are you suggesting that a better way to – you talk about two types of feedback, instant and delayed. How delayed do you make it? And you mean that you would go right to the end of the module, so to speak, or right to the end of the simulation and then give them the feedback? Is that what you meant?
Yes. So if the simulation is to capture an interaction, give you an experience negotiating with somebody, so maybe it's a 20-minute, 30-minute, even a 45-minute exercise round, then take them all the way to the end. So, I mean, it can go even up to an hour where, again, if the story is compelling in terms of how it unfolds with the decisions that they're making – They're going to get feedback in through how the story unfolds. So if they do something that's a less good decision, the customer or whoever's the players are in the simulation will have a negative reaction, and vice versa, a positive reaction when they do it right. So they are getting some form of feedback through the flow of the story. But in terms of the more in depth, they wait until the end of the round. Is what where my bias is, and it shouldn't be longer than an hour.
Okay, Ken, that's really interesting. That feedback issue is something we can really look at. The third one you talk about is the scorecard. Now, I know I'm going to handle that in another episode, I hope, but just quickly tell me what a scorecard does or what it is.
Okay, well, the timing, you know, the issue associated with when to use a simulation as opposed to other vehicles is going to be in something that relates to context, that's contextual, that there's no recipe to follow, that it's not a process that if you do these six things, you'll be successful. It's that there's some context there. It's between people, it's interpersonal, it's soft skills, whatever the case may be, but where there are going to be trade-offs, that if you do one thing, it could be positive, but it may still have a negative consequence. That's life. That even the right answer has some bad associated with it. We can't get away from that. And so what we want to be able to do, what the scorecard represents then, are those items, those observable items that help me to know whether or not I'm being successful or not being successful. And so from the observable, from the behaviors, from the competencies, there's a number of ways of referring to it. But what are the elements that go into, what are the things that I should be considering in every decision that are going to be affected by the decision that I make, or the people? I mean, because you can also incorporate stakeholders, because sometimes you can do one thing that's good for your team, but you upset your boss, or whatever the case may be, or you delight the client, but you upset your company. So understanding what those trade-offs are can manifest in the scorecard that we would see at the end of the round. Now, you can, again, present it during the round so you can see a dial moving. You can see scores changing. Or, again, you can hold off until the end of the round where they can see, okay, so and from a snapshot perspective, based on the group of decisions, because you also don't want to micromanage, right? Because oftentimes in life there's cause and effect and things play out over time. And so if you micromanage a decision just to see its effect, you lose sight of the bigger picture. And so, yeah, again, that's another issue on the delayed versus immediate. But anyway, that's the role of the scorecard. And that additional element would help, which helps bring the experience to life and make it sticky.
Okay. Now, you talk about in your booklet about the elements of a good scenario. Now, you've just mentioned scorecard, which is also part of the, you know, the foundation of the thing. What are the other characteristics or elements of a good scenario? You mentioned plot, characters, settings, and learning objectives. Can you just quickly speak about those ones?
Sure. Well, the learning objectives obviously ties to the scorecard. You really need to start, you know, when you got to have a goal in mind. There's got to be a reason why you're engaging them in an experience. And so knowing what the objectives are, what success looks like, or helps to define the nature of what you're trying to capture in that scenario or in that grouping of scenarios. And really, a simulation is going to be a series of scenarios tied together across a storyline. So knowing what you're measuring is a good way to create the boundaries inside of which you're going to create. Because one of the key challenges, I think, in this modality is that we tend to think about too much. We try to do too much. And what we're trying to do is make sure that we bound the exercise, bound the what it is we're creating, so that we can limit and only do what we need to do for the specific experience I need these students to have. And so by defining the learning objectives, that helps. So once we've created those boundaries, then we want to create the setting. Well, where is this taking place? And again, from the standpoint of one of the challenges that people experience often is, oh, I'm not a storyteller. I don't know how to tell stories. I don't know how to do it well. The fact is that as we've seen through television, certainly, and I think this is a global issue, reality TV is all over the place. So it's pretty clear that many, many, many people around the world enjoy seeing, whether it's the voyeur in each of us, but reality does seem to sell. So capturing something that looks like reality, which I think we covered last time to some degree, you know, is very important. So creating that setting that maybe not be exactly my world, but could be. So who are the kinds of what are the – is this taking place in an office? Is it taking place in a hallway? Is it taking place at a cafe? Is it taking place wherever? So define what that setting is so that we can now place our characters. So who is it that's at play here? Who is it that we're interacting with? Do I have a boss? Do I have a team? Do I have peers or colleagues? Do I have a customer? You know, who is it that is going to be engaging? Who are the key stakeholders, as it were, in what it is that's going to play out in this experience that we're going to do? Then we want to have a plot. You know, what is the ultimately? This is driven by the experience we want people to have. So what is it that they're going to what is it that we need them to do? What is it that we're essentially capturing the apprenticeship that they're going to do in this period, in this 20 minutes, in this 30 minutes, in this hour? What is it that they're going to experience? And that helps to capture the nature of the flow. And one of the things that you mentioned during our last podcast was the idea of being able to affect the emotions through the story. Is it a happy story or is it a sad story? Yeah. Are we trying to influence people to be thinking positively? One of the aspects of mindlessness is learned helplessness, that people forget how to win, especially in the global economy being not so great these last number of years, that we forget what it's like to be in a positive environment. And sometimes that can manifest inside of giving people a positive experience. And then obviously the scorecard can help to measure it.
I failed to mention two more, which are literally over the page in the book, and that's decision alternatives and branching. Could you speak to those two quickly and then
Sure. Terms of the, again, so once we have a sense of the plot, a sense of what the experience we need people to have, we know who they're interacting with, we have a sense of the story that's going to take place from those elements. Now we need to enable it to be experiential, where you get to actually choose your adventure. You get to proactively determine what's going to, so from an engagement perspective, that's going to be upped. So the story aspect is engaging on its own. We can up that, increase that significantly by the engagement aspect of actually choosing, making decisions. And so making good, setting good alternatives that your students or participants can actually have to select for. They have to critically think. This is where the critical thinking comes in, the judgment. So thinking through, and that in and of itself is an objective. So having good choices in a scenario is something that helps to propel a story forward. And then if you have the branching, so where it takes you from a consequence perspective, again, that is what it takes the engagement of the story and maintains it and actually has them wanting more. And so whether or not you finish them in a single application or you get them wanting more into a separate application, that's all for that's the leverage that you gain by engaging students in this way.
I know this could lead to a whole new discussion, and I don't want that to happen here, but I'd love to talk to you about this more. Do you think it's better when you design a scenario or a simulation to have them interacting with other learners during it, or is it a sort of me and the content or me and the characters in it, but not other learners? Like if they are having some sort of group activity with, well, how are you going? Because that would be real life too. I'm in the middle of this mire, guys. How would you handle it? Is that collaborative thing worth putting in a scenario?
Well, if you're asking me what my opinion on that is, I am heavily biased towards that as well. So that was a very leading question. So I couldn't have given you a better question to ask. I think that it's pretty clear. Again, the issue is all about engagement, right? I mean, that is the issue. If we can get people engaged, then we can do a whole lot. We can accomplish a ton. And so how do we get people engaged? So there's the aspects of simulation. But clearly, as we've seen from the social networking, people are engaged when they have an opportunity to interact with others in whatever format. And plus, the fact is that we can only see what we see, right? I can't see what you see unless you tell me.
Yep.
And so if we are collaboratively going through a scenario, then I double my potential impact, because now I can not only see it through my own eyes, but I can hear what you have to say about it, because you may approach it completely differently. You may have a different context that you're drawing from in which the same kind of issue plays out in a wholly different way. And so the opportunity to do things in pairs, in threes or fours, is a wonderful benefit that increases dramatically the opportunities for learning, both in terms of the scenarios, also in terms of going through the feedback, or even if you can't do it, the scenarios together, but you can do a debriefing together. Anything that you can do to engage in a collaborative way through the elements of the experience adds to it dramatically.
Excellent. And we'll talk, and I will, we'll talk a lot more about that in further podcast episodes, because how we do that, what technologies we do that, how do we bring about effective collaboration remotely, what do we build into a scenario or to a simulation, what tools we use, like do we use discussion groups, do we use live chats, how do we build all that together? That's another for another day. Did we talk about the branching? Are you comfortable with
we
the
did.
Branch? Right. Yeah. Okay. Let me – you alluded to this, and we're going to finish on this one, but again, I could be opening Pandora's box on this because it really – actually, this was the thing – one thing you said did you say it in the book? I'm not sure, but really sort of blew me away, which went, oh, my goodness, I'm going down the wrong path here. And that has to do with decision trees, all right? You made a comment there that you said in the book about focusing your design, and you said sort of, you know, let's go beyond that. Let's leave that alone. It's okay. Can you comment on this? Because that's where I started with my first scenario, my first simulation, was I asked the SME to create a decision tree. And even she, who is a real expert in the field, said that was really hard work. Talk to me,
it
please.
Is. Yeah, I mean, there's very few people, you know, in the learning space at least, who really enjoy flowcharting. You know, and the idea that, you know, if I have a scenario that realistically I have 10 things, I need, there's 10 choices, there's 10 different ways you can go. Now, that may be a little extreme, but if there was such a scenario, the idea of branching that if I make a decision and each decision takes me down a different pathway, that gives one a headache just thinking about it. And one of the things that's unique and that's interesting about experience design versus instruction is that we all tend to go down this path that we need to branch everything. And the reality is that the student doesn't know what's happening under the hood of the simulation. They don't know. And so if I don't tree it, if I don't create branches for everything, they won't know that I haven't done that. So in fact, if I have 10 options I need you to consider, it's important to realize that with the objective of critical thinking, once I make a decision, irrespective of the branching, once I have the student make a decision, they have accomplished that objective. They've ticked that box. They have critically thought. They've exhibited judgment. And so that in and of itself is a step forward. So now if I want to take that even further, now I'm going to do some branching. And on 10 branches, I may only need to do 2. I may have the right answer and everything else. If I write it properly, then they'll just know they got it right or they'll know they got it wrong. And in terms of their engagement with the story, again, as long as I've written a compelling reason to do that, then they'll feel that they're continuing to live the experience and things are moving along. I can differentiate the lessons through the feedback. So again, coming back to the narrative feedback and the scorecard, I can differentiate the scoring and the feedback so that when they get to that point, they can get something specific about the choice they made. But in the branching, in the tree aspect, I'm keeping a very limited tree, which is much easier to write, but doesn't necessarily diminish from the experience of the student.
That's what I found about SimWriter was really powerful, was the editing up front, how to write the story, you know, that capability, which is I don't see in storyline so strongly. Is there any other tools that you can quickly think of about this? I mean, how do you write the story? I mean, you just sit down with an SME and say, tell me about?
Well, I mean, that's certainly one way to do it. One of the things that I find, especially with experiences, and this is, you know, in the experience design model, there is the student experience, there's the writer experience, and there's the organizational experience. And it's there's a lot to benefit from in the actual writing. If you can write a sim, then you actually get to know your topic pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
Whether you're writing or whether you're working with a subject matter expert. But one of the things that is a very powerful aspect, I believe, of this is to distinguish between creating and critiquing, especially when you're working with a subject matter expert. Most people, I certainly speak for myself, I find it very intimidating to work from a blank sheet of paper or a blank screen. And I will often, you know, bring up another document or another presentation or another whatever it is, just so I have words on the page. I find it comforting. But on the other hand, and so it's even harder for a subject matter expert who you're trying to work with and you're trying to get information from, but they don't really know how to help you because they don't know what you're going to do. They're not learning experts. They may be experts in their fields, but that's not necessarily something that relates at all to learning.
Yes.
And so they don't know how to help you. So the issue becomes, can we put words on a page? Can we throw something together? Because you know what? And I think this is another one of those things that's worldwide. Everybody's a critic.
Correct.
Everybody can give you feedback. Everybody will tell you, no, that's terrible. But then you can ask why. So as long as a writer, you have thick skin and you can deal with the criticism because you know going into it that it's not going to be all that good. But give them something to react to. Start with, you know, tell the story of a day in the life, an hour in the life, right, whatever the case may be, of what it is that you're trying to capture, and let them react to it, and then they're going to be able to give you much more reasonable content, which then enables them to get excited because now they're seeing the benefits of what they're going to be able to do.
And with that gem, if I may, sorry to cut you off, Ken, I want to finish this episode up because you're now talking about how to get started, and that is – The six steps that you outline in the book are terrific, and particularly the scenario. Now, what the book I'm talking about will be mentioned at the end of this podcast, and I'm strongly recommending anybody that listens to this to go to ASTD website, where follow the links and buy the book, because we're not covering everything here. But what I'm going to ask Ken to do, if you would, Ken, is let's do another episode where you talk about the six steps. And then we'll also unpack or look at the job aid, if we may, because that is a really valuable thing. I've been talking to Ken Sparrow from Regis Design, is that?
Regis Company.
Regis Company. And Ken, thank you for your time. It's been a priceless experience, and I'm really looking forward to the next one.
I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Thanks, mate.